శ్రీగురుభ్యో నమః. హరిః ఓం. గణానాన్త్వా గణపతిగుం హవామహే కవిం కవీనాముపమశ్రవస్తమం జ్యేష్ఠరాజం బ్రహ్మణాం బ్రహ్మణస్పత ఆనశృణ్వన్నోతిభిః సీద సాదనం శ్రీమహాగణాధిపతయే నమః. సదాశివసమారంభాం శంకరాచార్యమధ్యమాం అస్మదాచార్యపర్యంతాం వందే గురు పరంపరాం. నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయేత్. ఆత్మస్వరూప బంధుగణ, సో లెట్ అస్ టేక్ అప్ ది వెర్సెస్ 62 and 63. దే ఆర్ టుగెదర్, బోత్ ఆఫ్ దెమ్ టుగెదర్ మేక్ వన్ పాయింట్. So you may say with me, dhyayato vishayan pumsah sangasteshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kamah kamat krodho bhijayate krodhat bhavati sammohah సమ్మోహాత్ స్మృతివిభ్రమ స్మృతిభ్రంశాత్ బుద్ధినాశ బుద్ధినాశాత్ ప్రణశ్యతి. విషయాన్ ధ్యాయతః పుంసః. పుమాన్ ఇస్ పర్సన్, పుంసః మీన్స్ టు దట్ పర్సన్. Who is this person who is meditating upon the sensations, vishaya? Vishaya is a sensation. You see, as long as this flower is here, it is an object. But it becomes a vishaya when I take it into hand, attracted by its beauty and its color, and then take it near the nose, and I like the fragrance, then I want to put it in my buttonhole. That is the desire. So, flower, seeing the flower is perception. Taking the flower into hand and putting at the nose is sensation, and then putting at the buttonhole is the action that follows a desire. These are various steps in desire. So, first we should understand that desiring attitude is bad. I'm not saying that you should not take a few items that you need. That is not what I mean. The attitude of desiring, undesiring, undesiring till the end of life, that continues. Once we become victims to that attitude, we cannot wriggle out of it. So, that is bad. For example, even flower, we can leave the flower where it is. We can just leave it where it is. But somehow what happens, human being, in his growth, progress, and technological development, etc., he has isolated himself from the nature. So that's why we clear the land and then put up a structure which keeps us separate from the nature. So, this is how the civilization means that. Anyway, I am not against the civilization, just I am analyzing in a basic way. So, having isolated ourselves from the nature, still we cannot live without nature. Somehow the inner urge is there to be one with the nature. Because that is what you are, essentially. This is the reason why we somehow again try to go back to the nature. Having isolated, we want to go back to the nature. So, therefore, having isolated ourselves effectively from the nature, we want to bring a piece of nature within. Or, on the weekend, go for a picnic. Picnic is what? The inherent urge to go back to the nature. And what is the meaning of plucking a flower and putting it at a table or in a flower vase, etc.? What is the meaning of it? You have isolated yourself from the nature, so you remain isolated, let the nature remain where it is. No, he cannot do that. He has to bring a piece of nature inside the house. The art is also same. They keep away from the landscapes and then make a landscape on a canvas and put it in the house. And there is a huge business on it. Everything is business. Every weakness is business. So instead of questioning the weakness, we build a business around it, a superstructure around it. Once you build a superstructure around it, now you are stuck with it. You cannot wriggle out of it, because this superstructure, which is built with so much effort, it becomes a justification for the original folly. So this is how human mind works. That is what Sri Krishna is telling here. Dhyayato vishayan. We dwell upon these objects of pleasure, and then they become a commitment for us. We develop attachment. Sangasteshu upajayate. In fact, we lost the ability to look at things without desiring, without identifying. That ability we lost. And having lost that ability, we want to know the Brahman or the Atman. And no way, it is not possible. You have to get back your ability. You have to train the mind in such a way that you will stop identifying and desiring at every occasion. You see the flower. Immediately, you see, there is a way of seeing a flower, and there is a way in which you should not see a flower. Suppose you see a flower, don't name it, don't describe it, don't categorize it, don't define it. Because the moment you do any of these things, already you are not seeing the flower, you are seeing the projection of your mind. So, the moment you see a flower, don't even give a name to it, just see it. In real attention, there is no seer and there is no seen. Only there is attention. Only there is seeing. In that seeing, observer and observed become one. And the subject-object division, it collapses. And the truth emerges automatically without your knowledge. Whereas, we forgot to see things that way. Because we have developed an elaborate structure, I mean in the mind I am telling, not around. Around doesn't matter, it is the mind which matters. Around comes later. So we developed an elaborate structure within the mind of perceiving, followed by sensation, followed by desire. This is the sequence, and that is what Bhagavan is describing here. I am surprised to see that our Madison Avenue advertisement pundits are also aware of this sequence. They know it. They are not novices. That's why they know how to create a desire in the person. That is their job. And therefore, they know the mechanism of desire formation, and so they work on it. I saw a commercial. Please just understand the commercial for what it is worth. Just I am trying to present a model which is given here. Dhyayato vishayan pumsah sangasteshu upajayate sangat sanjayate kamaha. So you see, then you perceive a thing which is same as seeing. You perceive it and then you define it and then dwell upon it. Then take it to the level of sensation, means take it into your hand. Since that's why they say, use it for a week. If you are not satisfied, return it. We will refund the whole money. He is taking it to the level of sensation. So now the object is in the shop and you are in your place. There is no sensation, there is only perception. Unless sensation comes, the next stage of desiring won't happen. Therefore he says, you take it home and keep it with you for a week. If you are not satisfied, you can return. He is sure that once the object is taken to the level of sensation, in 9 cases out of 10, it will stick. He is sure of that. That's why, so this commercial which I was mentioning, you will be surprised, it was a commercial for briefs. You know, briefs, underwear, they call it. That is the commercial. He wants to sell a few underwears. And so, a young and beautiful, energetic person, he comes onto the screen, wearing these briefs. And then you see how the commercial develops. And then a young lady walks in. And he touches his body, his strong muscles and all that. There is a joy in her face. And then a voice from behind, purchase our briefs, so and so briefs. What is this commercial? What does it mean? I see he is carefully driving the whole sequence of desire formation. That is what he is doing. So, anyway, you now got the other day, I was walking in a mall. Somewhere in a mall I was walking. Then one gentleman from behind the counter, he was beckoning to me and he was offering me a ball of food item, a small sweet ball or whatever, fixed to a stick. He was offering it to me. Sir, have it. I was a bit surprised. I asked him, how much is it? No, sir, it is free, you have it. Then I asked him, he is free and I was free, there was not many people around, therefore I just I have entered into a small conversation with him out of enthusiasm, because he is offering free. This is something which I have never seen a businessman doing it. So, anyway, and then I asked, why you are offering free? He said, sir, if you like it, then I have a serving which is $4.99. So $4.90. He won't say $5. There is another big psychology associated with it. $4.99. Then I told, suppose I eat it and then I don't take your serving. Okay, sir, I don't mind, you eat it. Then I said, thank you very much for your very kind offer. And so I moved away a little. And then he is busy with his work, he is offering it to other people, and I stood at a distance and saw some statistical observations. So psychologists do this all the time. So among 10 people who pass that way, five people receive, that means half of the people receive this piece from him. And out of the 5 people who have tasted it, 3 are purchasing it. So his statistics are clean. He is doing a nice business. He is not giving anything free. And whatever freely given, it is added to the bill in any case. So he is working on this principle. You take the object to the level of sensation, perceiving sensation, and then an attachment will grow and it becomes a desire. This is how the commerce people work. Because they know the human psychology. They are big psychologists. These people who sell objects, they are big psychologists. They know the psychology. They study psychology. They work on models and all that. So the other day I went to Walmart. A young lady was standing at the gate saying, sir, welcome. I was stunned. My goodness, here is a young lady welcoming me. I'm not going to purchase even $2 worth of item there. But still she welcomes. So they put that sense of pride in us. We enter inside like a Maharaja walking in, because she welcomed us. At home nobody welcomes us, at office nobody welcomes us. So here is a young lady who welcomes us without seeking any respect, she gives it, and then you walk in. Now you walk in with a pride. And in that elated mood, you open your purse. So this is all the tricks, how this world deceives us. Deceiving means what? It tricks us. And we take all that to be real without really looking at the inner workings of the mind behind all this. So the idea is, you do not pay attention to the objects of sense pleasures. You are making a mistake by even paying attention to them and then making the sensation to happen. Sensation is shabda roopa rasa sparsha gandha. So sound for the ears, nose fragrance for the nose. So the same thing, if you go to a perfume shop, he will have a small strip of paper. He dips it in a small perfume and he will hand over to you. You just carry it with you, like that. So once the sensation happens, you will go and purchase it. So this way, so dhyayataha, we should not dwell upon the objects of pleasure. We should know how to see things. without desiring. If you see things without desiring, then the real glory of Ishvara in the person, in the thing, will be appreciated by you. If you, for example, people use flowers without appreciating the glory of Ishvara in it. The Ishvara's glory in this flower, this structure, this symmetry that is associated with this flower, and the color, the color coloring molecules, the dyes, were synthesized by the plant in the stem. And they are, having synthesized those molecules, the plant manages to keep them here only. It doesn't keep elsewhere. And even in the flower petal, the molecules are arranged in a very symmetrical fashion. For example, in this petal, the lower half is yellow, the upper half is red. Like that, the yellow dye and red dye, even while they are synthesized molecules, they are arranged like that. There is a huge intelligence behind it. The amount of intelligence that is associated with the creation of this flower is mind-boggling. And that intelligence is Ishvara. Ishvara is Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. Ishvara is the intelligence that you find in every particle of this universe. The moment you look at it with a desiring attitude, all this you lose. That's why I say we do not know how to look at things, because we are consumed by our desires. It is like keeping colored glasses and looking at the world. So every object in the world appears colored by these glasses. Similarly, the ragadvesha, the intense likes and dislikes, are the glasses that we wear. And with those glasses we stop looking at the world. And therefore, no surprise that we do not see God anywhere in the world. That's why we keep a God in the heaven and we keep a God in a shrine. We needed all these mechanisms to relate to God, because we do not know how to look at the world. Therefore, it is high time that we stop seeing at the world with this attitude of desiring. So, vishayan dhyayataha, if you continue to dwell upon the objects of the world as something that can give pleasure to you, as things that we have to use for deriving pleasure out of them. So, with this kind of an attitude, as long as we see, we cannot see anything. This is what is called mithya jagat. So for us, the sun doesn't mean anything, the stars do not mean anything, a blue sky, the full moon in the night time, a flower, a plant, a tree, a woods, none of these things have any connection with our life. We became insensitive to all this because we are interested in only malls and objects and pleasures. So this is how artificial the life has become. And we think that happiness is in this thing. There is no happiness here. So, as a person continues to dwell upon the objects of the world, dhyayataha, so this dwelling followed by sensation, it develops into an attachment, sangasteshu upajayate. And these objects of pleasure, they are called vishaya. The word is a very interesting word. Because there is a poet says, Nihanti Vishamattaram Vishaya Smaranadapi. See, Visha, Vishaya, two related words. Visha is poison. Vishaya is an object of pleasure. Whatever it is, I am not saying flower is a big thing, or it is not a big deal about it. But still I feel that flowers can be left where they are. That feeling I have still. Let me be frank about it. So anyway, so the object of pleasure is there. It is called vishaya. And visha is poison. The poison can hurt you only when you consume it. Nihanti visham attaram. Vishaya smaranadapi. But an object of pleasure can hurt you. You need not consume it. It can hurt you by thinking of it. Smaranadapi. Just you think of it, that is good enough. You think of an object of pleasure, it hurts you. You can know. For example, you have an old car, and every time you think of a new car, it hurts you. And because it becomes a desire. A person who nurses a desire in his heart can never be peaceful in mind. Peace is gone. A desiring person is a very very dangerous person, in the sense that he is danger for himself and he is danger to everybody around him. That's why we call him a go-getter, a desiring person. So people, they are wary of a go-getter, because a self-centered person is very difficult to handle. And in a family situation, individual desires clash with each other. That is how all conflicts comes from desire. Out of selflessness, no conflict comes. Only out of desire, conflict comes. People fight over the TV channel which they have to see, prime time TV channel. Whether I should see this channel or that channel at 9 o'clock. That is a conflict. And that conflict can lead to anywhere. So this way, the desiring person is in trouble. He will attract all kinds of troubles from the society and other things. So Sangha is attachment or an obsession. And the Vishaya, the object of pleasure, is called Vishaya because Visheshena, Shuny is the dhatu, Shinyi Bandhane. So Visheshena, so it binds you very effectively. You cannot wriggle out of that bondage. This thing, it happens all the time in our life. With reference to food, it happens all the time. We know that now it is enough food for the lunch. Because again there is dinner, another 5-6 hours there will be dinner, if not snacks in between. So now I am satiated. At that level, the body gives a signal also. Now you are satiated. Body is satisfied, but the mind can never be satisfied. Body doesn't desire anything, I tell you. Deho na janati. Body doesn't desire anything. Except that also body doesn't desire. When it is cold, the body cries for your attention. You protect me. Put a shawl around me or put a sweater because I am shivering. This is what the body cries for. Body never desires anything. It only cries for attention when you neglect it. That is all the body does. And all desires are from the mind. If you go by, because body functions according to the nature's laws. The laws which made this flower what it is, those laws make this body what it is. The liver doesn't function by your volition. The heart doesn't function according to your understanding or your laws. They have their own intelligence. That intelligence is given to them by Ishvara. And they function their way. And so the stomach muscles, etc., they have their own functioning method. They tell you, enough. Enough is enough. But then we start eating things beyond that. Because mind wants more. Generally we give the example of food. Because it is easy to discuss. You have to extrapolate the ideas to the other four sensations. So Sangha, that obsession or that attachment to the objects of the pleasure, that becomes the bedrock of the psychology by continuously dwelling upon the objects of pleasure. This online trading, I try to understand this online trading, Amazon.com, etc. You see, this online trade, a person who presents an article before you and hopes you to purchase it, he is addressing the issue at one level. His job is easier because the object is there before you. You can establish a sensation also. Whereas for the online trader, the sensation is not there. It is he entirely relies upon your ability to dwell upon the object. Dhyanam alone. So he wants you to contemplate upon the object. More you contemplate, more he is benefited. Because the intermediate link of sensation is missing. That's why I have seen this Amazon.com window. You open the window, then he will start. It is as if he takes your hand and drives you through the shelves and through the floor space of the shop. As if that kind of very carefully they create on that window, very carefully they create steps. Very encouraging and inviting steps. Because poor fellow, for him sensation is not possible. He makes you to dwell upon it. The moment you purchase one article, then immediately, even before you have come out of that purchasing exercise, namely you click and so you have now purchased it. It put in the cart. So you click it, it goes into the cart. He puts the figure of a cart also. He makes you feel as if you are walking through a huge shop. So he transports your mind to a different level. And then he immediately flashes a number of related objects. Would you like any one of these things? Earlier one person purchased this object and he also purchased this one. So would you like to do the same? Shall I add this to the cart? Like that he... So I tell you, it is all a big make-believe and self-deception, nothing more than that. That's why people end up purchasing more items than they need. And they will be lying in the garage. First in the house, then they will go to the garage. Then they will come to the flea market. That is the route. Because he lost the utility of that object. In the first place, he never needed it. Now having purchased it, he wants to make the best bet out of it by selling it for some price. And one more idea. Don't think objects lie in their places. Objects lie in different corners of the house. Don't think like that. Possessions, they do not remain in their respective places. Possessions remain in the heart. The car, an old car sits in the garage. It won't disturb you. But a new car, a particularly liked car. I like this car very much. Yeah, that car is not just sitting in the garage. It is sitting in your heart. It is cluttering your heart. And you keep half a dozen of them in your heart, but you live on the background of insecurity. The person is no more secure because he has half a dozen things sitting in his heart. Money doesn't sit in the bank. Money doesn't sit in the stock, in a stock. Suppose you invest money in a stock. It doesn't sit in the stock alone. It sits in your heart. A new car not only sits in the garage, it sits in your heart. My friend doesn't live in his or her room. The friend lives in my heart also simultaneously. So you have half a dozen of them in the heart, then the person is totally samsari. Sangha it is. So sangha. And once the attachment grows, then a desire comes. Sangat sanjayate kamaha. As I already told you, desire is the groove of the mind. Same thought. Continuously pursued. And all the things related to that are also pursued. And it acquires the shape of a desire. Desire means, kamaha means, without it, I am nothing. And with it, I will be fulfilled. And, without it, you are nothing. That is already now. And so fulfillment is in the future. Once the desire, when you get the object, you will get fulfilled. Now you get the object. The sense of fulfillment will be such a short-lived thing it is. The sense of fulfillment remains with you till another desire comes. Only that much. The desire number one fulfilled, and the desire number two has not yet come in, so in between gap is there. That is where you feel fulfilled. Now what is the gap? Just you think. Between desire 1 and desire 2. Desire 1 fulfillment and desire 2 birth. What could be the gap? Once a friend of mine has purchased a new car and he invited me to the very first drive. Generally they take a swami. So I sat and he is driving. Once I sat, of course I love to be sitting there because I too love this car. Because I did not invest in anything. I can enjoy it. In fact, I can enjoy better than that gentleman, which is the case all the time. Because he owns it, whereas I do not own it. So I can enjoy it better. Now, he started driving it. While he is driving, within 100 yards, up to 100 yards driving, or maybe one furlong driving, he was very happy and fulfilled because he purchased a new car for which he was planning since the last 6 months. So he got it. He is fulfilled. Now, having gone a little distance, he tells me, Swamiji, I have to purchase new upholstery for this car. Already a new desire has come. He has to furnish that car. Furnishings are not there. Some plastic sheets are sitting there. They are making all noise whenever you move this side, that side. So for some special kind of furnishings have to come. Some soft cushions and all that. Already his mind went on to the soft cushions that he has to purchase. And gone. His fulfillment is over now. So the fulfillment that comes out of a desire, a desire is fulfilled and you feel fulfilled. So that feeling, that happiness, it is very short-lived, like a flash of lightning. So that also is not coming from the object in any case. Even that short-lived happiness also is within you only. What happened is, the springs of happiness which are there within you are temporarily exposed. Because once a desire is fulfilled, now the mind is not projecting. It became calm for a while. When the mind became calm, the inner springs of happiness, which are there all the time, they have been exposed temporarily. And so you derive a fantastic sense of happiness and fulfillment. In the meanwhile, the mind which is accustomed to desiring, it projects another desire. The springs of happiness are closed. So this way, the mind in the movement, which is in the form of desire, is the biggest obstacle for which covers up the inner springs of happiness. Therefore, while looking at the world, be cautious. Just look at the world without identification and without desiring. Then you will see a new dimension of the world itself. World will appear in a different glory altogether. So once you start looking at the world with the glasses of likes and dislikes and desiring, it is like a person with a jaundice disease sees the whole world yellow. That is what they say in a proverb. So that is what it happens. So the jaundice of the mind, that is what a desire is, kama. And if the desire is fulfilled, this is how it happens. Just now I described a little sense of fulfillment for a short while. But if it is not fulfilled, then what? Because most of the time our desires are not fulfilled. That is how it is. You cannot call the shots all the time. There are other desirers also. There are other people who desire the same thing. And our desires and the other person's desires, they come in clash all the time. Because we share the common space of enjoyment. So, when a desire is thwarted, its fulfillment was obstructed, then you get that desire now becomes anger. Kamat krodho bhijayate. In fact, chidran dadati kamasya nityam tamanu yerayaha. Like that they say. It is like a person is sitting in a fort. And the enemies are outside. The army of the enemy is outside. Now, for the enemy to enter into the fort and destroy this king of the fort, you need not open the main door. That main gate need not be opened. Nobody will open the main gate like that. So when the fort is under siege, just one small door in some corner, one small entry point is enough for the entire army to come inside. Once the entire army comes, the king will be dethroned. Similarly, this is the fort, the city of 11 gates, Puram Ekadishadwaram. So this is the city of 11 gates. And the first weak point in this fort is the desire. Once the desire comes into the heart, because the desire is about something of an outside object. That's why. So you look at the object, you sense that object, either you smell it or you taste it or whatever, one of these five sensations. Now that object in the form of a desire, or desire for that object enters into your heart. It is like the enemy has entered. Once one soldier of the enemy army enters inside, that is enough to break down all the defenses of the fort. All other people will enter one after the other. and the main gate will be opened and the enemy will come in flooding. So similarly, once you give occasion for the desire to enter your heart, all other negative emotions are waiting in queue. They will enter. Once I desire a particular object and I see another person possessing the same object, I am jealous of him. If I don't care for a given object, there is no occasion for becoming jealous. For example, a scholar is not jealous of a rich man. A scholar is jealous because he doesn't have much value for the riches, whereas a scholar is jealous of another scholar. A rich man is not jealous of a scholar. A rich man is jealous of another rich man. So, once you have a desire for something, then jealousy will come. And the desire unfulfilled breeds anger. And then envy, frustration, desire unfulfilled frustration, desire fulfilled lobha. Lobha means greed. So, like this, all negative emotions, then guilt, hurt, and finally, a mind fraught with all kinds of emotional disturbances is in place. You see, we create problems for ourselves. And we suffer. And we blame everybody else around. Nobody creates problems. Stars won't create problems for us. Planets won't create problems for us. It is our own false values which create problems for us. Even I don't have anything against these companies and multinationals, though I mention them as a passing reference. We don't have anything against them. They are as much victims of desire as we are. They are exploiting our desires. Somebody else will exploit their desires. It is a vicious circle. And we call it economy. So, you give a name to it as economic growth and all that. Some people ask, suppose there is no growth, then what? Do you want economic growth or do you want happiness in life? What is it that you want? This is all again a false notion. So, you want happiness in life or you want economic growth all around you? Which is it that you want? Both are sometimes not connected and sometimes both are opposite to each other. So, it seems, I look at the world, I see many people have got this message. That's why there are big protests against globalization and all that. Somehow they got hold of that point. We don't need all this economic growth. There is an obsession for growth in the society. We don't need that growth. I saw one example, I don't know how far you will agree with me. I am ready to be corrected also if my reading is wrong. Kmart was there, you know. Kmart was, it started with originally 2 shops. Then it has slowly grown to 1,000 shops. When it was having 750 shops, it was flourishing and it was giving big dividends to the stockholders. Then 1 year it expanded to 1,000 shops. And it became a burden to that. Then slowly it went bankrupt. Having gone to bankruptcy, it has closed 250 shops. Last time when I went home, when I went to India, it has closed 250 shops. And when I came back, my goodness, Kmart is not anymore bankrupt. It has come out of bankruptcy. That means what? That extra growth is what it killed it. That obsession for growth. If you are not obsessed with growth, you will grow to the required level and be happy. You need not grow permanently, continuously up and up and up and up. That kind of a growth is not necessary. It doesn't serve any purpose for anybody. So these companies, they grow and grow and grow and then fall with a big thud. Anyway, so that is the social thing. But for a person, he need not grow all the time in terms of worldly things. Inner growth has to come. So you need not grow in the world. A night watchman's job is enough to lead a comfortable and contented life. I'm not saying that we should become night watchmen. So that is enough, I am saying. Theoretically, that is enough. So we need not grow in terms of physical possessions and social power. We need not grow. That kind of a growth is a misplaced value, it is. It is the wrong value. It ends up in pain. The value must be for inner growth. How inner growth will come? Dhyayato vishayan. Instead of dwelling upon the objects of pleasure, you dwell upon Ishvara, dhyayataha ishvarasya, ishvaram. So, don't allow the mind to wander in the world. It is a desert, there is nothing in it. It is a mirage. On the other hand, focus the mind on Ishvara, who is within you. You need not search for Ishvara. You need not bring in Ishvara from outside. Prachak chetanadhigamaha. Ishvara is within you. Look within, search within, seek within. You want satisfaction, seek within. You want food for hunger, it is outside. You get it. Body gets it, you need not get it. Body gets it all the time. Body has its own clock, biological clock. And so at the right time, it gets the food. Wherever you are, you get the food. Food is not, people are worried about food. Food comes all the time. In Alaska also it comes. So you go to South Pole, it will come to you. So that kind of a systems are automatically taken care of. So what I mean is, you focus the mind on Ishvara. And other things are automatically taken care of. You don't seek without anything. You need not seek without anything. You seek within, continuously. Search within. That is the formula. So, looking around and seeking solutions from outside. Even when you go to the Guru, Guru will ask you to seek within. What the Guru teaches, what Vedanta teaches is, what you are seeking. Every human being is seeking happiness. That is what he is seeking. All these objects of desire are nothing but so many conduits for that happiness as conceived by this person in his ignorance. So anyway, seek within, that is the idea. So coming back to the sequence which is given in these two verses, when a desire is unfulfilled, it acquires the shape of anger, krodha. So krodha, kam runaddhi iti krodhaha, kam sukham runaddhi. So krodha, anger, is the biggest obstacle for happiness. And once you become angry, you will only regret that episode of anger for the whole life. And anger doesn't solve any problem. So we should not, anger comes. First anger appears as irritation. First it comes as irritation. And you should become alert at that moment itself, when it is becoming irritation. Also, I tell you one more thing. When the desire is not strong, in fact, I don't want to divide desires again as strong desires and weak desires. Just I don't want to do that. Every desire is undesirable. But still, when you just look at it and a thought happens and even a sensation happens, you are not very keen to fulfill it. If it comes your way, you are okay. If it doesn't come your way also, you are okay. You are comfortable. In that situation, if the object doesn't come to you, you will not become angry. Just a little attention towards the object and a small feeling that it could be good, I can have it, that kind of a feeling is not going to make you unhappy or angry if it doesn't come your way. Doesn't matter, okay, leave it. Doesn't matter, you do not become angry. But when you want it definitely, when you seek it with all your enthusiasm, that means it is a desire now, then if it doesn't come to you, you become angry. When you become angry, you see somebody who is coming in the way and your happiness. That's why you become angry. So, if you can search every self-centered motive within yourself and process it, if you can do that, then there is no occasion for anger in your life. I know any number of Mahatmas, they don't become angry. They may become sad, but not angry. Sadness is okay. Love and sadness can exist together. Love and hate cannot exist together. They are opposite to each other. They are not compatible. Whereas love or bhakti, devotion, and sadness or pain, they can exist together. They coexist. No problem. Whereas a desire and anger, they cannot, love and anger, they cannot coexist. Therefore, it is anger is like putting acid into a vessel. The acid, it will destroy its own container. Similarly, anger will destroy the person. The process of destruction is presented in some detail here. Krodhat bhavati sammohaha. Once you are angry, you are pushed into sammoha, a delusion. What is this sammoha? Delusion means, you see, you are a cultured person. Your upbringing, you have an educational background, a cultural background, these are all there. And you behave appropriately. You never misbehave, but once you are angry and that anger pushes the person into delusion, then all the cultural upbringing, the social background, educational background, everything is as if it is non-existent. It just disappears from the scene, and now the animal instinct of the human being is up. Therefore, that is the sammoha. Now he is no more a human being. He is an animal. So Shankara says, avivekaha karya karya vishayaha. So that in that anger, the person, he loses his discrimination which is all the time with him. This is something which I can do. This is something which I cannot. I should not. So that discrimination. Appropriate, inappropriate. Right, wrong. Proper, improper. There is a discrimination. And everybody has that discrimination. That discrimination just disappears. Because he is now one with an animal. He is one with an animal, really. So, the desire, through anger, brings out the animal in within us. There is an animal in us, and that is brought out. So, that is sammoha. Then sammohat smruti vibhramaha, that is the next step. Smruti vibhramaha means, Shankara says, here is a gentleman, he has, which I already anticipated and said in so many words, the cultural upbringing. He belongs to a good culture. He was brought up in a good culture. And also, he did not grow in a den of criminals. He was brought up in a very good culture. And also, he is highly educated. Shankara says, Shastra Acharya Upadesha Ahita Samskara Janita. So, he is highly educated. Even Vedanta also he studied. Gita he studied. And he has received training from the Acharya, from the great Mahatma, from a teacher. And this background creates a wonderful value system in his mind. But unfortunately, when anger is there, all this value system has gone to the winds, gone with the wind. All this value system has gone with the wind. And it doesn't serve any purpose. I tell you how. There was an elderly gentleman, some 70 or 75-year-old gentleman, a great scholar of Vedanta, of Gita. He was raving like a bull with anger. Then I told him, Sir, why you are so angry? Bhagavan Sri Krishna told in Gita that anger is very bad. I was about to say that. By kama esha, krodha esha, like that. Then he told me, if you quote Gita to me, I will throw you out of the house. That is what he told me. So, you see, he doesn't want to hear the quotation of Gita. That is what a person, he is not a communist or he is not an agnost saying this. He is a scholar who studied Gita in his life. A lifetime he has utilized for studying Gita. And now he says it to me. If you quote Gita to me, I will throw you out. What do you think, Gita I know? That is what he says. So, what Gita he knows? He doesn't know Gita. He knew Gita. And once he comes out of anger, again he will know Gita. But during that anger period, there is no Gita. Gita is gone down the drain. So that is the outcome of anger. That's why Bhagavan says in a different context, త్రివిధం నరకస్యేదం ద్వారం నాశనమాత్మన కామః క్రోధశ్చ లోభశ్చ తస్మాదేతత్రయం త్యజేత్. వి టాక్ ఆఫ్ హెల్, దెర్ ఈజ్ నో హెల్ వితౌట్. సో ది కింగ్డమ్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ ఈజ్ విత్ ఇన్, దట్ ఈజ్ వాట్ బైబిల్ సేస్. ఇఫ్ కింగ్డమ్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ ఈజ్ విత్ ఇన్, వాట్ అబౌట్ హెల్? ఇట్ ఈజ్ ఆల్సో విత్ ఇన్, ఇట్ కెనాట్ బి వితౌట్, యు నో. సో దేర్ ఆర్ త్రీ గేట్స్ ఆఫ్ హెల్. యూ కెన్ ఎంటర్ ఇన్ టు హెల్ త్రూ ఎనీ వన్ ఆఫ్ దోస్ గేట్స్. వాట్ ఆర్ దోస్ గేట్స్? కామ క్రోధ లోభ. కామ డిజైర్, క్రోధ యాంగర్, లోభ గ్రీడ్. దెన్ ఇన్ దట్ సీక్వెన్స్, ఇట్ ఈస్ ఇన్ ది 17th చాప్టర్, ద సీక్వెన్స్ ఈజ్ వెరీ ఇంట్రెస్టింగ్. దెన్ అర్జున లుక్స్ ఎట్ శ్రీకృష్ణ, వై యూ టాక్ ఆఫ్ త్రీ గేట్స్, వై నాట్ టెల్ వన్ గేట్? కండెన్స్ త్రీ టు టూ, వన్ విల్ బి మోర్ కంఫర్టబుల్, సో దట్ వీ కెన్ అవాయిడ్ దట్ గేట్. ఇఫ్ యూ సే త్రీ గేట్స్ దెన్ వీ హ్యావ్ టు అవాయిడ్ త్రీ గేట్స్. If we have to avoid only one gate, because it is hell, we want to avoid it. If it is just, say, one gate, then we will be more comfortable. Then Sri Krishna says, okay, I condense all the three into one, and that is kamaha. Because kama thwarted, desire thwarted or obstructed becomes anger, desire fulfilled becomes greed. You have a fulfilled desire, you are greedy. There will be greed in the heart. So kama, krodha, lobha, for the purpose of analysis, you can divide and unravel a particular emotion so that you can address it more effectively. Whereas if you want to look at it in a unified fashion, it is the kama, desire, which is at the center of all our troubles. Why troubles? Our downfall. So, krodhat bhavati sammohaha, sammohat smurti vibhramaha. An entire value system, which was carefully developed over years, is all wasted because it doesn't serve any purpose. It doesn't serve to rectify the situation. So, smurti bhramshat buddhi nashaha. If you do this a few times, namely, you have a very high education, wonderful cultural background and all that, but the person in his folly goes after a few desires and becomes angry again and again and again. So this way what happens, what all benefits that would accrue to him by way of this cultural background and higher studies and all that, that whole values they will be destroyed totally, and his capacity to make use of this education, this cultural upbringing, it is totally lost. Buddhinashaha. Buddhinashat pranashyati. Once you see a human being is what his ideas are. A human being should not be looked upon as a mass of flesh and bones. So that is not the way to look at a person. Even in the boxing ring, the victory is not based on the physical strength. In the boxing ring, the person becomes victorious based on his strength of mind. It is the mind game it is. In the boxing ring, it is mind game. It is not a physical game. It looks like a physical fight, but there is a mind behind it. Like our national football. It looks like a very rugged physical game, but it is much, much more than a physical game it is. It is played on the board more than in the field. So it's a mental game it is. Because a human being, even in such pursuits where physical strength appears predominant, like boxing and games, etc., even in those pursuits, it is the game of knowledge. It is the game played with understanding, with mind. You cannot escape from your true nature. So a human being is essentially a conscious being. So, which comes first, knowledge or action? First comes knowledge, then comes action. Even in somnambulism, where the person sleepwalks, it is his samskaras, his deep-rooted impressions, which make him walk in a given direction. So he walks in a path which he regularly takes. Even in sleepwalk, it is the hidden knowledge which drives the person, which guides the person. Therefore, in life, if you ignore knowledge, If you keep knowledge away, understanding away, you have lost a whole life. Therefore, we should be constantly aware of the movements of the small self, the responses of the small self in all its relationships. So, when you relate with the objective world, whether it is relating with the physical objects or with people in human relationships, the identification, that is sangha, attachment, followed by desiring, this vitiates the whole atmosphere. And you can never appreciate the glory of Ishvara that is so strikingly present in the creation. We can never appreciate it because we lost that sensitivity. We don't know how to look at the world. We live on the background of desires and fears, and with a vision which is totally colored and vitiated by these desires and fears, we see the world. And therefore, for us in the world, only names and forms appear. We like some and dislike some others, and we are driven by our likes and dislikes. We are totally deprived of the glory of Ishvara that is all around. And also, the inner true nature of the human being is denied to him, essentially divine. Every human being is potentially divine. Divinity is your true inheritance. You are the Brahman now and here, without any doubt. But that fact is denied to the person because of the very wrong desires and fears structure, a very wrong structure of the mind. And we make a lot of complaints. We have so many complaints against the world, against God, against nature. And all the problems that we face in life are created by ourselves. No, God has better things to do. He won't create any problems for us. And society, people in the society, everybody is suffering his own problems. They are not interested to create problems to us. If we cross their path, then they create problems to us. If we refuse to cross their path, if you withdraw, then what problem anybody can create to you? Therefore, in yoga, I don't hesitate to say this in yoga camp. If I have to say this in a college or in a company, addressing some company executives, etc., sometimes I do that also. If I have to do such a, if I have to speak there, I have to just be cautious in diluting what I wanted to say. But here you are all students of yoga. For a yogi, world has nothing to offer. For a yogi, his goal, his happiness, his values, his ideals, everything is in his heart. And yoga is turning back towards the world and focusing the mind on Ishvara. That is yoga. Where Ishvara Chintanam, means contemplation upon Ishvara, becomes weak, there Loka Chintanam enters, contemplation upon the pleasures of the world enters. Therefore, if you weaken the Loka Chintanam, then Ishvara Chintanam becomes strong. Therefore, one should contemplate as much as possible on Ishvara, within and without. One should not live by desires and fears. One should process, examine, and eliminate desires and fears. We should not live by desires and fears. Living by desires and fears means you undertake activities impelled by a given desire or driven by a given fear. Both ways of lifestyle are bad. So one should, that is not yoga, that is ayoga. Yoga is live by Ishvara, that is yoga. So I was happy to have addressed you for all this 1 week. And this is my last class. Even while giving that booklet to you, I knew that I am not going to finish all the verses. But I allowed all the verses to be printed so that you will have the verses with you. And you can read the translation and you can relate to them later at home. And who knows, God willing, you will come back for the next yoga camp. And I will finish those verses in the next yoga camp, God willing. So thank you very much.
ఓం పూర్ణమదః పూర్ణమిదం పూర్ణాత్ పూర్ణముదచ్యతే పూర్ణస్య పూర్ణమాదాయ పూర్ణమేవావశిష్యతే. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. హరిః ఓం శ్రీ గురుభ్యో నమః. హరిః ఓం తత్సత్. శ్రీకృష్ణార్పణమస్తు.